just to come back to this recap, this overview, been really talking or reflecting on these domains of insight, both the understanding of our personal world, our personal story, which, you know, to some extent, of course, is unique to each of us. We all have different conditions in our life, different paths, different input, which has all played a part in kind of shaping who we are or who we believe ourselves to be at this moment in our life. And there's, you know, there's that wonderful saying that all that we are now is a result of all that we were, and that all that we will be tomorrow or even the next moment will be the result of all that we are now. And we certainly see this in our lives, each of us. We see the winds of all of the voices in our lives, past experience, past encounters, which have all really played a part in shaping our personality view in itself, you know, and much of our personal story really is our personality view. And this is not something we invented. You know, we did not get up this morning deciding it's a good day to be anxious. We did not get up this morning deciding it's a good day to be depressed or fearful. We actually see how many of the conditions in our past really have, you know, shaped our sense of self, which of course in turn shapes our sense of the world and how we interact with that world. And certainly from the perspective of Buddhist psychology, that just because something has a long history does not mean that it has an equally long future. So the whole perspective of Buddhist psychology is that we don't dismiss this personal story, but this is actually where we apply many of the insights that are universal, including the insight into understanding the insubstantiality of personality view. And what we learn to do in the practice is to bring in this moment a whole kind of series, a whole world of other conditions, such as kindness, investigation, inquiry, equanimity, non-identification, which of course is what brings to an end that momentum of past influence in terms of its power to shape the present. So we spoke some about the personal story and began to speak about this more universal story, starting with Nietzsche, the understanding of non-self, the understanding of mana, the conceit of self, and how we position ourselves in the world. And of course, you know, the question that many struggle is not really always the right word. The question that bewilders many people is actually how there can be often this dissonance or disconnect between our understandings and the way that those understandings are actually applied within our personal story. And a lot of that bewilderment, I think, really should rightly lead to the question of how enchanted we are with suffering. If you remember yesterday, I quoted that statement of the Buddha about learning to become disenchanted with suffering, learning to become disenchanted with the patterns that create struggle and anguish. But of course, this disconnection is a place for many people in practice of enormous frustration and at times bewilderment. It's like, being a spectator at times upon our own disasters, even when we tell ourselves we should know better. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you, one of my kind of neuroscientists, science friends, talked often about this journey in a way that I'm rather fond of as a movement from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence to conscious competence. And I quite like that phrasing, you know, because I think it's one that we can really relate to very well, that often before we really have access to any tools, really for transforming the moment, we often do feel that kind of unconscious incompetence when our lives are driven by impulse and reactivity, and that we often get spit out the end of some emotional storm or some psychological storm, and with this sense of mystification of, like, how did that happen? And sometimes that's followed by the word again, unfortunately. But how did that happen? How did I end up there? Just that genuine sense of very deep confusion, of not knowing what's going on, and just being swept along by, actually, the sankharas, the patterns of dukkha creation. There was a Western philosopher who once put it that we dance through life like puppets on the end of the strings of our impulses. And of course, this is what we're really endeavoring to really bring some mindfulness into and some inquiry into, what it means not to dance through life on the ends of the strings of our impulses. That is much of this cultivation, much of this journey. And then there is the place of conscious incompetence, which I think is a very challenging place in many people's practice, actually. And I don't think there's a shortcut around it, where we actually know what's going on. We know, oh, that's aversion, you know. We've got the vocabulary, you know. That's aversion, or that's greed, that's craving, you know, or that's reactivity, and yet still find ourselves somewhat in the grip of it and being pushed by it. And that is actually such a frustrating place, because we're aware of the kind of dissonance between what we know and how that knowing is actually lived. And it often feels as if our knowing or our insights simply don't hold the same power as the patterns. So the patterns are overwhelming the knowing, and that is indeed, you know, a very, very frustrating place. You know, we see it all the time, many, many times in a day, where, you know, we may go into our day really with the, you know, the dedication to bring as much kindness and respect into our day until the first annoying person comes along, you know, and then we see the aversion is there, and the intention is getting overwhelmed, getting sabotaged, really, by the power of the patterning. And so this is a frustrating place. It's a place where actually many, many people practice. It's really the place where, you know, how to let go of the word again, by the way, is very helpful. But how to actually meet those places of dissonance and actually begin to undo that sense of frustration. That is, I think, a positive sense that comes from knowing where we sort of are not living in a way aligned with our deepest values and deepest aspirations and deepest understandings. And, of course, you know, the development of this path, and it is a developmental path, is certainly intended to move into a place of conscious competence, where there really is that quality of embodiment. That quality of living. And I think this is an area of a genuine area of investigation for many, because, you know, for most Westerners in practice, they come into the practice having already engaged in quite a lot of self-inquiry, you know, self-understanding. They, you know, through various means, whether it's through therapy or, you know, whatever way they've done it, but with a considerable level, I think, of personal insight, many Westerners come into practice. And, you know, also what we're talking about, discussing this weekend, this, quite frankly, is not news to anybody. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot of kind of reflection and contemplation, really, to begin to discern the reality of non-self. Certainly we know a lot about impermanence, know a lot about dukkha, and yet we're constantly trying to heal the gaps, you know, to let those be very lived insights And of course, that is what awakening is really concerned with. And just as I mentioned yesterday, it's very important not to over-romanticize anatta as some mystical experience rather than an evident actuality. It's also very important not to over-romanticize awakening and nibbana, also not to diminish it. Certainly when the Buddha speaks about nibbana in its deepest sense, it is, you know, the blowing out the fire, really blowing out the fires of greed, hatred and delusion, really blowing out the fires of avidya so they do not arise again. Without remainder, as the Buddha often refers to it. And so it is very important to have a sense of the kind of depth, the profundity of that. And yet also know that that quality of uprooting, blowing out the fires, that sense of freedom, it does not suddenly fall from the heavens. This is a developmental path. And part of that is actually learning to liberate the moment. And I think in practice it is very helpful actually almost to consider that this is a practice of nibbana-in. Nibbana-in, moment to moment. So we're not waiting for the fire truck to come. You know, we're using the fire extinguisher moment to moment, you know, to blow out the fires of greed, hatred and delusion, and to know that that does not leave a vacuum. That the falling away of greed, hatred, and delusion is simultaneously the flowering of really unshakable metta, kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity. And, you know, liberating the moment is very much concerned with integrating and embodying that which we know into a lived, felt, alive and dynamic way of being in the world.